House will come to order, and the clerk will call the roll.
Barker.
Here.
Barnhart. Berger. Beyer. Bonamici.
Here.
Boone. Boquist. Bruin.
Here.
Buckley. Burley. Butler.
Good.
Cameron. Cannon. Clem. Cowan. Dallum. Dingfelder. Chris Edwards. David Edwards. Esquivel. Flores. Galizio. Garrard. Gilzer. Gilliam. Gilman. Gerard. Greenlick. Hannah. Holvey. Hunt. Jensen. Comp. Kotek. Krieger. Crummel. Lim. McPherson. Maurer. Minnis. Morgan. Nathanson. Nelson. Nolan. Olson. Reed. Richardson. Riley. Roblin. Rosenbaum. Schaffler. Scott. Shields. Greg Smith. Patty Smith. Thatcher. Tomei. Wisnet. Witt. Mr. Speaker. Excused. Boone. Boquist. Esquivel. Minnis. Olson. Patty Smith. Excused for business of the House. Berger. Buckley. Hunt. Rosenbaum. Roblin. Thatcher. Nolan.
Flag salute will be led by Representative Bill Garrard.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Opening ceremony today will be a moment of silence. Courtesies. Representative Garrard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to introduce some pages that I have here. It's a group of students from Lord's Charter School who are serving as honorary pages today. The first one is Coyote Omkara. Her hometown is Sayo. She's in seventh grade, and she enjoys reading and student council. The second one is Kura Grease, who's from Staten. She's in seventh grade, and she enjoys volleyball. The third one is Alex McCready. She, too, is from Staten. She's in eighth grade. She likes soccer and piano. Eric Stevenson, who's in seventh grade. He's also from Staten. He enjoys volleyball. And Ryan Hendricks, who's from Staten, who is in eighth grade and enjoys golf, video games, and math. I bid them welcome.
Thank you, Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to, colleagues, extend courtesies to a group of individuals in the upper gallery today with the Healthy Kids Learn Better Coalition, a 40-plus member coalition that connects educates all of us on the connection between health and education. They're in the Capitol today. Please stop by and check out their information. And again, hula hoop contest at noon. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
That is something I will look forward to seeing but not participating in. Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In the back gallery up here, we have 54 fifth graders from Middleton Elementary School in Sherwood, which is right in the heart of my district. And they are led today by Karen Migliaretto. I hope I said your name right, Karen. And we are very glad to have them. They're on a tour and going to get to see a little bit of action that occurs here in the state capitol today. Thank you and welcome.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good morning, colleagues. Please help me welcome today Katie Nelson. Katie is actually a constituent of Representative Morgan, is a product of Roseburg High School. She started interning in our office days after the session began. She's been a great help in the office. She will be graduating from Oregon State University tomorrow with a degree in history and Spanish. So please say hello to Katie and congratulate her on her college graduation. Thank you.
Congratulations, Katie. Representative Comp.
Thank you, Speaker Merkley. That's a hard act to follow. Congratulations, Katie. I'm honored to have some students here from Woodburn today, from Nellie Muir Elementary, and they are the talented and gifted children and hope to be ducks and beavers one of these days. And their teacher is Stephen Price, and when you see them in the hall, please welcome them. Thank you, Speaker Merkley.
Welcome. Representative Lim.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And sitting with me is Darina Trahan. She has been interning with me since the beginning of this session. Today is the last day. I hope she would come back to see us. She is currently senior paralegal for the City of Portland, where she has worked for the past 6 years. Darina is an upperclassman. Is a classman, is a right, or classwoman should be? At Portland State University, majoring in social science and intends to attend law school after graduation. Darina currently lives in Corbett, Oregon, with her husband, Paul, and two children, Whitney and Carlton. She has been a great asset to my office, and I would like to thank her for all her hard work. She lives in the Representative Patty Smith District. And I would like to welcome her here again and wish you the best of luck in the future. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Further courtesies? We'll go ahead and read the names of the various pages that Representative Comp is sponsoring so each of them can stand. Kayan Robles. Cohen Cruson, Kyle Nelson, Eris Vargas, Joey Curtis, and Daniel Tangedal. Sorry, Daniel, if I butchered your name. Nellie Muir. So it's good to have all of you with us. Thank you. Further courtesies? Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the Senate has passed Senate Bill 241, 362, 371, 380, 384, 392. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform that he has signed SB 60.
First reading, memorials and resolutions. Standing committee reports. Committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and consideration of House Bill 2700 be made a special order of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Thursday, March 15, 2007 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. First reading of House bills.
House Bill 3530, relating to short-term borrowing.
Bill read first time. This passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 296, relating to housing. House Bill 2675, relating to notice of teacher contract renewal. House Bill 2679, relating to public employee retirement.
Bills read second time or passed the third reading. Consent calendar. Clerk will read the bill in short summary.
House Bill 2095, relating to housing authorities, allows housing authority to own mixed-income housing project.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2095A. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes aye. Representative Cameron, how do you vote? Cameron votes aye. Representative Hanna votes aye. Representative Girard? Representative Girard? Votes aye. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Nolan is excused for business of the House. Representative Morgan? Representative Morgan is excused for business of the House. Representative Jensen is excused for business of the House. Representative Hanna, how do you vote? Hanna votes aye. House Bill 2095A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill in summary.
House Bill 2630, related to Oregon Veterans Home Account, permits state employee or state officer to authorize deduction from salary or wages from Oregon Veterans Home Account.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2630. Those are the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Gelser votes aye. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? Holvey votes aye. Representative Nelson, how do you vote? Representative Nelson votes aye. House Bill 2630, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. Clerk will read the bill and summary.
House Bill 2235, relating to connection to federal tax laws and prescribing an effective date.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2235. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, every 2 years we go through an exercise to reconnect Oregon's tax laws to those of the Internal Revenue Code. This particular biennium is no different. What has happened is that in the Revenue Committee, we've received the report of the Oregon Society of CPAs in conjunction with the Department of Revenue and the certified smart folks down in the Legislative Revenue Office, encouraging us to continue with our connectivity. And if you'll look, there's a report sent from Legislative Revenue Office indicating that the cost is very, very minimal, it actually was negligible, and no dollar amounts are given in the connectivity in this particular session. Now, I could go through all 16 or all 20 sections of the connectivity with you, but basically I just want to tell you this, that non-connectivity with the Internal Revenue Code is the full employment dream for all tax preparers, and I encourage your aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Butler, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Speaker, just to let you know that I do have a conflict of interest. By passing this particular legislation, my job becomes much easier and I'm liable to lose some revenue. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Butler. That was not a statement for the record, was it?
Mr. Speaker, I still have a license to practice accountancy in the state and to prepare tax returns. I better declare a conflict for the record. Thank you.
Okay, your conflict is duly noted for the record. Those are the opinion. The bill should pass. I'll vote aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk will open the voting system. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Beyer votes aye. House Bill 2235, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2250, relating to surcharge on workers' compensation rating plan for assigned risk pool.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2250. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2250 comes to you from your Labor and Business and Labor Committee with their full support. Let me explain where this came from, if I can, and then be happy to answer any questions. Oregon employers with subject employees are required to have workers' compensation insurance. Some employers, however, cannot get workers' compensation insurance coverage in the regular insurance market. This is the high-risk pool. The assigned risk plan provides coverage to employers who are otherwise eligible for workers' compensation insurance but who cannot obtain it in the voluntary insurance market. Assigned risk plan employers pay premiums on their coverage. However, in some years, plan losses are more than the amount of premium collected from plan employers. Under current law, voluntary market insurers are required to pay their proportionate share of these costs, which are passed along to the covered employers through the rate-making process. The Department of Consumer and Business Services recently studied the assigned risk plan because there are years when it doesn't cover. This study resulted in a number of recommendations to improve plan pricing, funding, and structure. As part of the study of the plan, the department identified one pricing mechanism that is currently not allowed in statute. Under the law, if a plan losses are greater than the premiums collected from plan employers, the director may not charge any of the losses directly to those assigned plan employers. This is called a surcharge in the law, and that's where everyone's hackles get up. It's a surcharge. It would be the charge directly to those people in the plan. HB 2250 removes this prohibition on surcharging the assigned risk plan. The bill does not require that a surcharge be levied, but would allow the director the option to charge assigned risk participants for some or all of the plan losses. The department would consider using the surcharge allowed under House Bill 2250 only if other pricing mechanisms are not able to address the plan shortfall. This is not say there's going to be a surcharge, only that it is authorized in the event of a shortfall, and it is one of many strategies that are under consideration. The House Business and Labor Committee and the Workers' Compensation MLOC Management Labor Advisory Committee have reviewed this bill, voted to support it. It is a tool in the toolbox when the assigned risk pool isn't covering costs. I will close there and welcome any questions.
Further discussion, Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I just wanted to let you know that I met with
to the bill.
To the bill. I met with John Schiltz at the Department of Consumer and Business Services regarding the assigned risk pool. And any of you that have started an organization, started a small business, you realize that that's where you're probably going to start out for your workers' comp insurance. And they went through with a fine-tooth comb to make sure that once small businesses start there, that they're not held there longer than they should and that they can get the lowest rates possible. They did a very lengthy study that I reviewed. I think what I found is that the department is doing a very good job at helping people get their workers' comp insurance and then getting them into the voluntary market where they can save some money. So I just wanted to put a vote of confidence in the work that they're doing on this. They're paying close attention to it, and I would support this bill. I urge your vote.
Further discussion, Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question to Carrier.
Question to the Carrier. Does Carrier yield?
I do.
Carrier yields.
Representative from West Salem, I just want to clarify that this is for the assigned risk pool. These are employers that are having a difficult time controlling their workers' comp claims. And in their policies, they would be notified that this is a potential surcharge and that they would be signing, acknowledging that this is going to happen to them if they have charges that go over and above the policy premium.
Thank you, Representative, for the question. If the surcharge were levied, employers would receive advance notice, as they do now, during the rate-making process. This notice usually happens in October for the upcoming policy year. Employers would have a minimum of 3 months to plan for an additional expense or more if their renewal is after January 1.
Further discussion, Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to declare a potential conflict of interest because someone in my family works for a workers' compensation insurance company.
Representative Nathanson asks for unanimous consent to state a conflict of interest or a potential conflict of interest. Please restate your interest or your conflict.
Someone in my family works for a workers' compensation insurance company.
Okay, your statement is recorded for the record.
Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion, Representative Garrod.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll also declare a conflict. My wife works for Workman's
Please,
Comp.
Please state your conflict.
My wife works for Workman's Comp.
Your statement of potential conflict of interest is noted for the record. Further discussion? Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And being one who, never mind, I won't make any comments. I don't know if this is a potential conflict, but I am an employer that has workers' compensation insurance.
Your statement of potential conflict of interest is recorded for the record. Representative Berger, do you wish to close?
Thank you. Briefly, I think it's important that this assigned risk pool be stable and available because these are our incubator businesses. These are the small businesses that might have high risk. Insurance costs are going to be a problem for them, but without the viable high-risk pool, they will have less chance to succeed, not more. So I support this as part of one of many tools that we can use to make sure that incubator businesses get the coverage they need to prosper and grow. Thank you.
Those are the opinion. The bill should pass. We'll vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. House Bill 2250, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2456, relating to school buses and prescribing an effective date.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2456A. Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, what a beautiful day it is. As a little background on House Bill 2456, let me share with you that the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration regulates school bus construction standards. and school buses manufactured after April 1, 1977 comply with stricter construction standards. These standards include padded, high-back, energy-absorbing seats, special requirements for wheelchair restraint systems, brake systems that enable school buses to stop in shorter distances, protected fuel tanks, lamps, and reflective devices that indicate when the bus is loading and unloading our precious children. Special mirrors are also provided that allow the driver to see critical areas around the bus, and a stopping arm. Colleagues, right now, 12 school buses in the state of Oregon are older than 1977, and of those 12, 11 just happen to be in my district, and that's why we're bringing this bill forward. What House Bill 2456A would do, it would prohibit the use of school buses manufactured before April 1977 from being used in the public school and private school system. House Bill 2456 is a great way for us to protect our children. I encourage an aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, this is one of those bills that is a mandate on local school districts, but it is not an unfunded mandate because, as you may be aware, the way that we do equipment purchases as a state, any school district that wants to purchase a new bus, we provide a 10% reimbursement for that for each of 10 years. So they get that money back. We've got these buses that are over 30 years old, and we're one of the very few states that still allows these school buses, which are completely unsafe, as the good representative from Heppner just outlined, that are completely unsafe for our kids. We are one of the few states that still allow them. We have, through this bill, an opportunity to correct that. Many school districts have already stepped up, taken advantage of that reimbursement. This is an opportunity to make sure that the rest do that now. So I would urge your support for this bill.
For the discussion, Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do, Mr. Speaker.
Thank
carrier
you.
Carrier does.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Representative. I apologize for not letting you know or giving you a heads up on these questions, but from previous comments, I understand that there's two districts involved in this.
That is correct.
And they are.
Further question.
Well, let me, if I may, Mr. Speaker, just clarify a little further. There are two districts. One is Wallowa School District, and the other is the Joseph School District, both in Wallowa County, District 57, Land of Loaves, or no, that's Jensen, Land of Food and Shelter.
I'm so glad to hear that. Further question, Mr. Speaker.
Further question of the carrier. Carrier yield.
I do, Mr. Speaker.
He does.
Do we have thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, Representative. Do we have a guesstimate as to the cost to replace these buses and what it's going to cost the school districts?
We actually do not have a firm cost on the replacement of new school buses, but let me share with the body here. In the community of Wallowa and in the community of Joseph, those transportation needs are contracted to a private carrier, and so it will be the responsibility of the private carrier to make the fiscal decision of whether or not they want to carry out with their contract, knowing that they're going to have to upgrade the buses they currently provide.
Further question, Mr. Speaker?
Further question of the carrier? Carrier yield? He does.
Given that there's a private contractor in this case, and if they wouldn't, two questions arise around that. One is, can they take advantage of this reimbursement that the representative from Milwaukee was talking about? And if they can't, then does that leave the school districts without any way of transporting their kids for transportation purposes?
Another good question. This was an issue that we discussed thoroughly down in committee because we were concerned about not placing an undue burden on these small rural school districts. At the same time, we are trying to balance that with the needs of our children. And what we did find out with a little bit of investigation was that, yes, there is reimbursement dollars available, and, yes, the school district is capable, should they choose, through the private negotiation to pass those dollars on to the transportation provider.
Thank you. One more question, Mr. Speaker?
One more question, Carrie Eel.
I do, Mr.
He
Speaker.
Does.
Thank you, Representative. So this is going to, in essence, if the school districts have been being reimbursed all along for these buses, then this is going to force them to actually use the money for buses as opposed to shifting it to some other purpose. And the other thing, question that kind of goes along with that, is that I don't see any money appropriation in this budget for something that we're going to mandate for these schools to do. Was that a consideration in the discussions?
Another fine question. This was discussed thoroughly down in committee. It's important to understand in these small rural school districts, the notion of operating their own bus system is just fiscally impossible. And so what they've chosen to do is contract this service out. And in terms of replacing these vehicles, this is an issue that a private busing company, and there are multiple companies that service Wallowa County or have the capability of servicing Wallowa County, are just going to have to simply decide whether or not it fiscally makes sense for them to do it. What we understand with conversations with the current bus carrier is that they are willing to step up to the plate and to make the necessary additions to make sure that our children are protected in Wallowa County.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, my only concern about this is that we're pushing off a mandate on to two school districts. Unfortunately, they have buses that are older than 1977, which that's a 30-year-old bus. And I realize that buses can go a long time, but, you know. But my concern is that there's no appropriation in here to cover this, and yet we're forcing this expense onto the school districts. Yes, if they are contracted with a private entity, that's fine. But now all of a sudden, that private entity is going to be in the position of having to push buses out there that they may not have in their fleet. If they push the buses out there that they don't have in their fleet, is that going to constitute a breach of contract on the part of the school district? And I think that's a value, that's a significant question to be asking, because if all of a sudden, by state law, we unwittingly have queered the contract that the district has with the provider of the services, I can see how the district all of a sudden ends up being in a breach. And they're unable to recover from that. Then the question becomes, if the company decides to walk, how does the school district come up with however many buses they need over the next 6 months to be able to meet the needs of their kids in terms of getting their kids to school and meeting all of the transportation needs? So I'm very hesitant to vote in favor of this bill, and I think on those grounds I'm going to stand in opposition to it. I think that having the effective date out a little bit further could be a valuable thing, and we want to give the school districts the opportunity and the chance to be able to respond when we pass state laws here. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, those of you who were here previously know I sponsored the bill to require seat belts in buses in the previous legislature. It was defeated in its infant stage because one wealthy nearby school district had 20 of these antiquated buses. The first thing I was told when I came to the legislature this year was, Donna, they replaced the buses, and I'm going, yay. There will be no reason to defeat this purpose of seat belts. So even though this bill does not require seat belts, I'm going to hope that somewhere here in the future that not only do we require more modern buses, but that we require seat belts. We need not look any further than the recent bus accident in Georgia that killed 5 of those college students. The NTSB reported that had these students, been in seat belts, they would more than likely be alive. This is a good bill. Let's just work it further.
Representative Dallum.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Does it carry here?
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield? No.
It says no.
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
The carrier does.
In regard to the buses specifically, have these buses stood the annual inspection for safety?
To the good district representative from District 59, I do not know that answer.
I'm sure that they have. And the next question would be, did they pass that inspection? Have they been declared safe and reliable to transport students?
Yeah. To the good representative, from District 59, I would not in any way surmise that our superintendents in Wallowa County in any way would put their children in danger on buses that are unsafe. Unsafe, but not modern.
Thank you very much.
Further discussion? Representative Smith, do you wish to close?
Well, just very quickly, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I think perhaps I've done a little bit of disservice to this body. What we're talking about here are 12 buses statewide, and an opportunity to make sure that every child in the state of Oregon is transported in a safe and efficient manner. To the good representative, Hunt, I apologize, I can't see your name here, but to the good representative, this was a great piece of legislation that he worked with our committee chair and with his staff on to find a reasonable compromise to make sure that the 2 school districts in my district stepped up to the plate and took care of an issue they needed to take care of, and at the same time made sure they weren't putting an undue burden on a small rural school district. And so I think it's a good bill, and I would encourage each and every one of you to join me in supporting Representative Hunt in this effort.
Those are the opinion. The bill should pass. We'll vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Burley, how do you vote? Burley votes aye. Representative Nelson, for what purpose are you in the queue?
Mr. Speaker, I request a return to courtesies when it's possible, please.
We'll come back to you after we complete the vote. House Bill 2456A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Nelson has requested a return to courtesies. Without objection, Representative Nelson, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I want you to look up here in this balcony, and you're going to see some brilliant students. And good students, good readers, good character. And I'm so honored today to present to you students from Bethel Christian School in McMinnville, and here with their leader, Janet Stubings. Can we give them a warm welcome?
It's great to have you. Further courtesies? Clerk, will read the next bill.
House Bill 5045, relating to Financial Administration, State Board of Tax Practitioners, declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 5045A. Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 5045 comes to you from
the Ways and Means General Government Subcommittee and the General Ways and Means Committee. House Bill 5045 is the budget bill for the Oregon Board of Tax Practitioners. The Board of Tax Practitioners is a consumer protection licensing board that oversees individuals and businesses who prepare personal income tax returns for others. The board issues two levels of individual licenses, tax preparer and tax consultant. Preparer level licensees are apprentice practitioners and must work under supervision. Tax consultants must have at least 2 years experience, equivalent of 780 hours, in tax preparation and may work independently. Tax firms and their branch offices are also registered by the board. The committee approved an other funds budget of $975,436 and four positions, that is four FTE. The committee's recommended budget is a 9.3% decrease from the governor's recommended budget of $1,075,985, and it should also be noted that the committee's recommended budget is the same as the essential budget level. This reduction reflects a fee bill that has been introduced by the board to raise fees and in a separate bill, and the reduction, this reduction will be reversed pending successful passage of House Bill 2240, which is that bill that I just referenced. The committee approved the agency's performance measures. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of House Bill 5045 as amended.
Further discussion, Representative Richardson.
Mr. Speaker, I stand in opposition to this bill.
To the bill?
To the bill. And the primary reason is that it is circumventing the budgeting process in a way that's not good for this body. The bill references House Bill 2240, which will increase fees for tax practitioners from $10 to $20 per license. But it says, but that bill isn't up. And so what we have is a reasonable Ways and Means budget approval here, but in the fine print, it says that if the current legislation, meaning the fee increases that are in House Bill 2240, go through, then there will be additional expenditures that will be put into a package, and they'll be discussed at the end of session omnibus bill, which for those that are freshmen here is affectionately known as the Christmas tree bill. And this is a bill at the very end of the session when there's changes made and negotiations on what it'll take to end the session. And it has a very broad relating clause, and it's a very big bill, and it comes in such a rush that often there's not even a time, an opportunity to read the bill because it's at the very end of the session. So we have Ways and Means proposing a budget that's rational, but with the caveat that there's another bill that'll raise fees. And if that bill goes through, then this budget is tanked, and that there will be a new budget, essentially, that will incorporate additional spending because of the additional revenue from the raised fees, and we will never address that bill individually, but it'll just be part of an omnibus bill at the end. That is contra to what is appropriate under the Ways and Means process, and so I would hope that those that think that we need to have real bills that are lasting bills that we're going to be voting on, we'll vote no on this bill. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Edwards, you wish to close?
Yeah, I will, just for the members, a clarification. It's my understanding, and to address Representative Richardson's concerns.
Can you pause for just a moment?
Sure.
Representative Jensen, did you wish to speak to the bill? Representative Edwards, would you mind suspending your close?
No,
because I think I missed President Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and my apologies for being a split second late on punching in on this, and not meaning to interrupt my good friend and colleague on the subcommittee on general government, but I just wanted to let Representative Richardson know that House Bill 2240 will be in front of the subcommittee on Monday and be passed out, I think, assuming that everything is kosher after we've had the usual and normal discussion on it there. And as a consequence, we will not be waiting until necessarily the end of the session for all of this to transpire or take place. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion? Take two. Representative Edwards.
Representative Jensen just offered the clarification that I was going to offer, so I have no further closing remarks.
Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Greenluck, how do you vote? Greenluck votes aye. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Beyer votes aye. Representative Roblin, how do you vote? Representative Roblin? Roblin votes aye. House Bill 5045A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 5049, relating to financial administration of state treasurer and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 5049A. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 5049A comes to you from your Ways and Means Committee. It is the budget on the state, the treasurer of the state of Oregon. House Bill 5049A. Notes that the treasurer is basically the banker for all Oregon state agencies. The treasurer coordinates and approves bond sales, invests excess temporary cash for local government. He also administers the Oregon College Savings Network, Oregon 529 College Savings Network. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means approved six additional staff The Joint Committee on Ways and Means approved a total budget of $32 million and 82 positions. The committee approved six additional staff to address it, investments and debt management workloads. Funding for 1 year of maximum potential bonuses for the investment staffs are included in the budget. The treasurer can return to the legislature or the emergency board if additional limitation is needed because investment staff beat their targeted targets for both years in the biennium. Because of changing work responsibilities and demands, five position reclassifications were approved, and one half-time position was increased to a full-time position. The committee also approved expenditure authority for additional marketing and oversight of the College 529 Savings Network. The increase in staff will be accommodated with existing office space, and the need for future office space for the treasurer's office was discussed at length, along with a more general discussion of the future office space needs of the Capitol Mall. Planning for additional space on the mall is expected to begin in earnest this coming biennium, and it is hoped that additional uniform rent space will be developed on the mall with the needs of all state agencies considered through input and review by the Capital Projects Advisory Board. The committee also reviewed and approved the agency's performance measures. Most of the measures are against benchmarks, which will change and cannot, therefore, be forecast with accuracy. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends that House Bill 5049 be passed by this body. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A question to the carrier.
Was that a question to the carrier?
Carrier yields.
Carrier yields.
Well, thank you, sir. Can I ask a question about this increased staff that would help the division take advantage of new investment opportunities in its private equity portfolio? Did you get testimony on the extent to which that would be used to increase the investment council's investment in emerging Oregon industries, according to House Bill 3613 that we passed in the session before last?
They might be, but it was not specifically directed in that direction.
Well, may I ask a further question, sir?
Further question is Carrier Yield.
Yes.
Carrier does.
Was there any discussion with the Treasurer's staff on their performance in meeting the $100 million investment goal for emerging Oregon industries that House Bill 3613 required them to do?
Not in the subcommittee, no, or in the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the bill?
To the bill.
There's been some criticism, and some of you may have seen a newspaper story on it a couple of weeks ago, of the apparent inability of the Treasurer to meet the objectives that we stated for them in House Bill 3613, that is to use a part of its alternative investment component of its investment portfolio allocation model to invest in emerging Oregon industries. The performance looks to many of us like it's been less than appropriate given the time that they've had to begin to move the portfolio in that direction. They have brought in a set of firms to do this kind of investment, but they've not really apparently succeeded in finding the legitimate investments to make in this state. And we're now having a real problem having enough venture capital here to fuel the new ideas that are coming out of Oregon. So I would just like to comment, I'm going to vote in this bill, but I would just like to comment that I hope that staff that's been would help the division take advantage of new investment opportunities in its private equity portfolios and to search out other investment opportunities for up to 3% of the PERS portfolio would be focused and their performance would be evaluated on the extent to which they are able to use that money to create jobs in the state of Oregon by funding legitimate, high-quality, emerging Oregon industries in this area. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Further discussion, Representative Girard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question to Carrier.
Question to the Carrier. Does the Carrier yield?
Yes,
he does.
Since this is a general fund expenditure, does Ways and Means have an outline of the total state budget and more specifically the funding allotment for the state police?
Mr. Speaker, do we have an outline of the total state budget We have an outline of the, as I think all of us have, the governor's recommended budget, and we will have, in the not too distant future, an outline or a complete work of the co-chair's budget. I'm not sure, Representative, if I can ask for a clarification, where this was not really in the area that we were dealing with in the general government on this particular budget, and I'm a little concerned where we want to go.
Mr. Speaker, to the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, budgets are real simple. They're a pie, and we have to divvy up the pie. If we don't know what's going to certain areas of that pie, it's real difficult to do an allocation for another area of the pie. In this case, the Treasurer's budget is asking for 6 new employees, and it's coming from the general fund. Personally, I'm concerned about state funding for the state police, and I want to make sure that that comes out of general fund revenue, and I want them funded really well. So until I get an outline that's not the governor's budget, because the governor's budget no one seems to be adhering to, I'm going to be voting no on appropriation bills.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Jensen, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a couple of points, if I can, to clarify some of the questions that my good colleagues were raising and some of the points they were interested. As far as Representative Greenlick is concerned, I hasten to point out that the discussion about the Oregon business, emerging Oregon businesses, first of all, is in statute that there's $100 million in statute for that, which, by the way, is a very, very small part of the investment portfolio that the Treasurer is responsible for, something in excess of, I believe, $60 billion. in relationship to that discussion, I think it's also, colleagues, fair to note that that's an important discussion and an important question that the representative is bringing up with that, and I certainly would respect that. Please understand that that is not the purview of the Ways and Means Committee. That is the purview of a policy committee as to whether or not any type of change, alterations, or what have you might be or might not be desirable in relationship to that statute. The other issue, a question that was raised, I would hasten to point out that there are no general fund dollars in this budget. These are all other fund dollars. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Representative Gilliam is off the floor. Representative Burley, how do you vote? Representative Burley votes aye. House Bill 5049A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2247, relating to services provided by nurse practitioners and workers' compensation claims.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2247A. Representative Shuffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In the 2003 session, House Bill 3669 was enacted, which expanded the role of nurse practitioners in the workers' compensation system by increasing the level of care to an injured worker from 30 days from the date of injury, or 12 visits, whichever comes first, to 90 days from the date of the first visit, and allows the authorization of temporary disability for injured workers for 60 days from the date of the first visit. The bill also outlined the role of nurse practitioners within the workers' compensation system, such as allowing the management of the return-to-work status of the injured worker during the time period, and requiring nurse practitioners to refer to an attending physician to determine the worker's impairment for the purpose of evaluating the worker's disability. As a precaution, a sunset of January 1, 2008 was placed on the law changes. House Bill 2247A removes the sunset and maintains current statutes relating to nurse practitioners and workers' compensation. The Department of Consumer and Business Services studied the impact of House Bill 3669 and found that there was a minimal system impact of expanding the status of nurse practitioners. In addition, analysis provided by SAFE Corporation showed that payments to nurse practitioners acting as an attending physician were a very small percentage of total payments made by SAFE on claims with nurse practitioner billings. MLAC, a Management Labor Advisory Committee, unanimously approved the measure and its amendments, which outlines the plan for making the nurse practitioner law changes permanent. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Maurer.
Mr. Speaker, I need to declare a conflict of interest.
Please state your conflict for the record.
My wife is a family nurse practitioner.
Your potential conflict is noted for the record. Any further discussion? Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to to the bill.
To the bill.
I just want to make note of one thing that is becoming a problem in respects to our statutes and these sorts of issues. And it arises on page 8 at line 32. And the it says that if the nurse practitioner, actually starting on line 30, if the nurse practitioner agrees to refer the worker to the managed care organization for any specialized treatment, including physical therapy, to be furnished by another provider that the worker may require, and then it goes on from there. There's been some discussion this session about the term physical therapy and whether or not that is a generic term or is a term that can be owned by a certain licensed practitioner. And it can be argued, I think, that the term physical therapy has in general become a generalized term or generic term. And I just want to point that out to the body, that at some point in the future, what we may really need to do, because of the nomenclature in healthcare, we may at some point need to go through and sort of scour the statutes and wherever it says physical therapy, unless the service is provided specifically by a licensed physical therapist and is dictated to be done that way, we should actually go back through and change the nomenclature to physical medicine and rehabilitation services. This would be more in line, because in the world today, there are many other professionals and providers that provide physical medicine services. The list is actually quite exhaustive, and I would just point that out. And I'm anticipating, and my interpretation of this is that this bill is meaning that the term physical therapy is being used as a generic term. And I just wanted to get that on the record. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Shoffler, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are the opinion, the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, no, and the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Barker, how do you vote? Barker votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Gilliam votes aye. Representative Flores, how do you vote? Flores votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Shields, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I apologize for not doing this sooner, but maybe a potential conflict. I understand this bill could affect family nurse practitioners, and my wife is a family nurse practitioner.
Your conflict or potential conflict is noted for the record. House Bill 2247A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 2446, relating to video lottery game terminals and establishments with Brewery Public House licenses.
Question now arises upon passage, third reading, final passage of House Bill 2446. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2446. I was asked to draft this bill on behalf of constituent of one of my colleagues in Portland that currently has video poker in his establishment. And I want to reemphasize that. He currently has video poker in his establishment. This bill would not allow him to expand it any further than he's already expanded. What this bill does is, when video poker was started back in the early 90s, those of us that were around remember when you ordered a beer, it was probably a Coors Light or a Budweiser, and maybe there were some microbrews that were starting up in Seattle and Portland. But today we have a whole new industry called brew pubs, small little places. Those were not included in the original language for adding video lottery. Today, this establishment that I'm referring to has a brew pub license, which allows him to sell Coors Light and all the other things that a normal liquor license would allow him to sell, but it doesn't allow him to bring in video poker unless he buys a second license. So he has to purchase two licenses to have his video poker in his room, in his small little establishment in southeast Portland. So this bill just clarifies that language. It allows him to continue to have his video poker and not have to purchase that second license.
Further discussion? Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Before we go to the bill, if I go to one of our fine Oregon brew pubs, the last thing I'm going to do is order a Coors Light. But I thought I'd throw that in
there.
To the bill, Mr. Speaker. As a good representative said, this is just getting rid of one of the licenses. That's all we're doing here. We are not expanding the lottery at all. It would give those who have a license already the ability to, if they so choose, if they own a brew pub. But that does not necessarily mean that they will. And there may be some nice, good, decent, well-intended people speaking against this bill about the lottery. Mr. Speaker, if we want to get rid of the lottery, let's get rid of it. And I got all kinds of ways to replace that revenue if that's what we want to do. And I won't go into those today, but we have the riches in this state to do that. We can do it by building America and putting people to work. We can get rid of the lottery, pull that needle out of our arm that we're addicted to, and we're not going to get rid of, by the way. But when I see the bill on the floor, I'll gladly do it as soon as people agree with me on how to replace that revenue. Thank you very much.
For the discussion, Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I urge your opposition.
To the bill?
To the bill, thank you. I urge your opposition to House Bill 2446. This bill moves Oregon in the wrong direction. The statistics on gambling are staggering. 47,000 adult Oregonians are currently problem gamblers, and there are additional 28,000 who are pathological gamblers. The average gambling debt is $23,000 among those who are seeking treatment. 23% of those seeking treatment reported committing crimes to obtain gambling money. And in the Oregonian, dated Monday, March 5th, TriNet suspicions led to inquiry. A union treasurer is suspected of gambling with as much as $500,000. That's $500,000 intended to pay for elder and child care. He spent that gambling. We also heard about the city official in West Lynn who embezzled over $1 million. My own husband suffered $250,000 embezzlement by somebody who spent it gambling. This was a woman with small children. Colleagues, I also want to read you a little bit from constituents. My husband is a problem gambler in recovery. He never had a problem with gambling until he was exposed to video poker. I expect that you are aware that a disproportionate number of problem gamblers in Oregon have an addiction to video poker, and even worse, colleagues, are line games. Individuals with chronic PTSD, that's addiction to gambling, like my husband, are particularly vulnerable to video poker due to the trance-like effect it brings, allowing the individual to dissociate from all other distractions and feelings. And if you've ever watched anyone at a video terminal, you can see they're not having fun. This is not a fun addiction. Another colleague wrote, among many other issues, I am particularly interested in the issue of gambling addiction. My own life and family were heavily impacted by a loved one's hidden addiction. I ended up in bankruptcy myself after a nightmarish year of painful discovery, disaster by disaster, lie upon lie, of what was actually behind the destruction of our financial stability and family relationships. In one of my committees, we had testimony from three people who are recovering addicts. One man is also a recovering alcoholic, and he stated that in the past there was some onus against someone being a recovering alcoholic. That's no longer the case. People now say, I've been in recovery so many years, and they're proud of that fact. They are not proud about being gambling addicts. This is a hidden addiction and one that is every bit as destructive as abuse addiction. So, colleagues, please vote against expanding gambling in our state. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I rise in opposition to House Bill 2446. I voted against this bill in committee, as did another committee member. Several people have asked me about that no vote, and I wanted to explain why I did so. The good representative from Happy Valley talked about our addiction as a state to the revenue that is generated by these gambling establishments, and that is one thing, but I think the addiction that is more worrisome is something that comes along with it, and that is what the previous speaker referred to, the problem gamblers whose lives have really been destroyed. The price that is paid by those people, their families, their employers is just something that is a tragedy. And we heard from quite a few of those people, as well as the professionals who treat the problem of gambling addiction. And, you know, you can argue that this is not an expansion of the lottery or of gambling. But, in fact, if you look at the revenue impact of the bill, it does predict approximately an additional $50,000 to be generated as a result of making it easier to get these gambling terminals in brew pubs. And so I would argue that that is an expansion, that $50,000, at least some chunk of it, is going to come from the people that have a problem. And to me, that is an expansion. That is a reason why I voted no in committee, and I will do so today, and I urge you to do so as well.
Further discussion, Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I need to declare a conflict of interest.
Please state your conflict.
My family and I have financial interest in companies that make and sell video lottery games and
okay, your potential
gambling
conflict
machines.
Is noted for the record. Representative Holley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise to speak to the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, I find myself in an interesting position here. I share my colleagues' concern about gambling in this state. It is a big problem. I know that 3 to 4% of the people who gamble in this state have have been identified as problem gamblers, and it really does affect their lives a lot. However, I am going to be changing my vote on this bill on the floor because it is my, after looking at this closer, that most of these brew pubs can get these licenses now and just have to pay two licenses, as opposed to some other facilities that only have to pay once. And so it then becomes an issue of fairness for me. And so I am changing my vote to yay. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, to the bill.
To the bill.
I spent about the last 6 years of my life before I joined the legislature doing research in the area of substance abuse and chaired a National Academy of Science committee on the issue of substance abuse treatment. It is very clear that gambling disorder is a very serious problem, and that it's made worse the extent to which there are gambling machines closer to the people who are likely to become addicted to this problem. I would be delighted to join with my colleagues from Happy Valley and co-sponsor a bill. I too agree that we have to get that needle out of our arm, and I even have a proposal for how to deal with the fact that we would lose about a billion or more a biennium, but I think we have to do it. In the meantime, I think we need to vote against any kind of expansion of gambling. If somebody came to us and said, in all fairness, brew pubs are having trouble making money, let's give them licenses to sell cocaine, because that would really allow these small businesses to survive and survive well. You might all raise your hand on how many of you would vote to provide brew pubs the ability to sell cocaine, or marijuana, or heroin. In fact, that's what we're doing here, and we are affecting the life of all these people. My son is a defense attorney, and he tells me every case of embezzlement he's defended in his recent career as a defense attorney has been embezzlement as a result of a gambling addiction. These video games are cocaine to the gambler, to the potentially addicted gambler, and we ought to, as a matter of moral principle, vote against any expansion of gambling in this state. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Lim.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues.
To the bill.
To the bill. This is really a small potato. Comparing, we have 2,000 establishments and 10,000 video poker machines in our state. Our state is known gambling state. It's continued to expand, and we need to recognize that. It's a hidden tax. Rich people, usually they don't play machines, but poor people, single mother, and then a salesman, good small businessman, somehow they hooked into, and they couldn't get out of it. If someone has an alcoholic problem, it could be treated. If someone has a drug addict problem, it could be treated. If someone has a gambling addicted problem, that is the mental disease. It is very difficult to cure that. Of course, some people could be cured, but it's not easy. This is a mental disease of this gambling. It's one of the most difficult diseases that could be cured. Already I mentioned this is just a small potato. You know, what the heck? This is a small one. Adding $50,000 additional incomes, this is no biggie. but that we need to send a strong message that we need to reverse the directions we are going. Do you know in the last 2 years, since the inception of the video poker game, what we call the line game, from $900 million, it went up to $1.4 billion, which is $400 million more than the previous many years. It's about the 38% increase in last 2 years. Are we continue to grow and more depend on the revenue from this unstable gambling revenue? We need to say no. You know, we can blame it. Oh, this lottery is passed by the people, and we blame to the people. You people did it. We are not responsible. We are responsible as a legislator. I think we need to send that sound and strong message saying no. I'm not necessarily talking about the blue pop, you know. That is not a big issue. But we need to send a strong message. One of my deep concern is not expanding one or two machines or one or two more establishments. I'm sending the message to the young children of our state. We are continually depending on educating our children from the fund of gambling money. We are sending mixed signal. Sometime in the future, young children, our students, you will get rich sometime when the luck strikes. That is not the message we want to send. Let me proudly tell you that the 41 years ago when I came here, I came without a penny in my pocket. And I proudly say that I worked as a janitor, house painter, pots and pans salesman and gardener, and a real estate salesperson, and then a small mom and pop grocery store, and then a vitamin company, and then we invested it. After, when I became 50 years old, I was financially independent. So I was able to serve in the public since then on, still doing it. So let's send a message. Hard working pays good, but not on this gambling. So I'm going to soundly oppose approving this House Bill 2446. Thank you very much.
Further discussion, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I was on the committee that heard this bill, and we have... obviously, from the discussion today, a lot to say about gambling and our lottery and its value and its impact. That's not what this bill is about. This bill is about removing an unnecessary regulation on a very, very small segment of our micro beer industry, which is something we are also known for, and it is not about gambling. It is about regulatory streamlining and easing the burden on a very small segment of our business community. And I support it and urge an aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Cameron, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As my colleague from West Salem said, I just want to drive that point home. I do believe that this is about a regulatory issue. And I appreciate, personally, I appreciate the debate about gambling. And I know personally from family what it can do. I've experienced it. And I've experienced it with people around me and what it can do. But what we're talking about here today is not a bill to pull the Oregon State Lottery and figure out how to fund $1 billion in lottery-backed bonds that pays for the train that moves to Gresham. We're not talking about that here. If we were, you'd probably see me vote in a different way than I'm going to vote on this bill. This is about 22 locations in the brew pub industry that have to buy an extra license because they brew their own beer. If they served beer and didn't brew their own beer, they'd only have to buy one license. Open our ears. Think about what we're voting on here. Thank you.
Those are the opinion that the bill should pass. We'll vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Butler, how do you vote? Butler votes no. Representative Richardson, how do you vote? Richardson votes no. House Bill 2446, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and all memorials and resolutions be carried over to their proper place on Thursday, March 15, 2007 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 241 relating to commercial fisheries. Senate Bill 362 relating to Oregon prescription drug program. Senate Bill 371 relating to the emergency board and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 380 relating to school employees and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 384 relating to school administrators and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 392 relating to school attendance.
Chair requests. Bills read first time or passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 32 relating to disclosure of information regarding cremated remains and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 268 relating to judicial review of orders of the Workers' Compensation Board.
Bills read second time or passed the third reading. Third reading of Senate bills. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and the Senate bills be carried over to their proper place on Thursday, March 15, 2007 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Tomei.
Remonstrances, please, Mr. Speaker.
We are under announcements.
All right. I'll wait.
Representative Hunt.
Mr. Speaker, I request unanimous consent that Representative Gilliam be allowed to vote on House Bill 5049A. His vote will not change the outcome.
Representative Hunt requests unanimous consent that Representative Gilliam be allowed to vote on House Bill, was that 1549A?
5049A. 5049A.
Without objection, Representative Gilliam, how do you vote?
No.
Gilliam votes no. Representative Greenlake. Announcements, yes.
Yes, I, at 12:30 there's going to be a rally on the Capitol steps with Governor John Kitzhaber, Senators Bates and Westland, and others to talk about, to rally for health care reform, and all of you that are interested in that issue are invited to attend.
Further announcements? Remonstrances. Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this is a Women's History Month, and so I'm going to be reading the biographies of a few women. I'm going to be starting out with Marian Anderson. Marian Anderson is an African-American woman who was born in Philadelphia in February 1897. She performed all over the world. She did a solo recital in 1928 at the Carnegie Hall. She was performing mainly for black audiences until she went to Europe. And in Europe, she sang 142 concerts in Scandinavia alone. She sang before King Gustav in Stockholm and King Christian in Copenhagen. She sang for Jan Sibelius, a Finnish composer, and he dedicated his song Solitude to her. And he said, the roof of my house is too low for your voice. She sang for Arturo Toscanini, and he said, yours is a voice such as one hears once in 100 years. She also sang for Saul Hurok, and he made a contract for her, and he wanted to rent Washington, D.C.'s Constitutional Hall, but he was told that there were no dates available. And actually, it was concerts by white artists only. The public was outraged, and the First Lady, Eleanor Roosevelt, resigned from the Daughters of the American Revolution, who owned the hall. She offered her a free-air open concert on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, where she sang on Easter Day. She sang before 75,000 people and millions of radio listeners. This lady did not want a lot of publicity. She said later, I studied my conscience. She thought whether or not she wanted to do this. She could see that my significance as an individual was small in this affair, but I had become, whether I liked it or not, a symbol respecting my people. Several weeks later, she gave a private concert at the White House where she sang for President Roosevelt, and he was entertaining King George VI and Queen Elizabeth of Britain. She also sang for the New York Metropolitan Opera. She was the first black singer and a regular company member. Dwight D. Eisenhower appointed her as a delegate to the United Nations Human Rights Committee, and she sang at his inauguration as well as the inauguration for John F. Kennedy. President Lyndon Johnson awarded her the American Medal of Freedom. In 1977, Congress awarded her a gold medal for what was thought to be, wasn't her 75th birthday. In Europe, she was welcomed into the finest hotels and restaurants, but in the United States, she was shifted to third or fourth class accommodations. In the South, she had to stay with friends. Simple tasks such as arranging for laundry, taking a train, eating at a restaurant were difficult. We especially honor her because she moved to Oregon, Portland, Oregon, in 1992.
My apologies. You're out of time, and under the rules, one cannot yield time under remonstrances. Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To continue a great story, in July 1992, as the good representative from Milwaukee just said, Marion moved to Portland, Oregon, to live with her nephew, conductor James DePriest. And in 1993, she died of heart failure at the ripe old age of 96. So we are very happy to join together, Representative Tomei and I, and honor the contributions to Oregon and to America and the world of Marian Anderson.
Thank you.
Representative Cowan.
Colleagues, it is with a sad heart that I acknowledge the loss of another young Marine. Lance Corporal Nathan Windsor died this past Saturday of combat injuries received in Iraq, where he'd been serving for just 2 months. His mother's a resident of Scappoose. His father, formerly of Newport, lives in Tualatin. Nathan was a 2005 graduate of Newport High School. His friends and classmates remember him as just 140 pounds of pure muscle. He was a high school wrestler, enjoyed film production and the arts, wrote excellent poetry, and was an outstanding snowboarder. Nathan joined the military to accomplish something of which he and his family could be proud. Sean Bovette, Nathan's best friend, said he was truly a hero among men, and more importantly, was a friend among friends. A celebration of Nathan's life will be held tomorrow in Newport. His casket will arrive at Portland International Airport on Friday and will be met with full military honors. A family memorial service will take place Sunday in St. Helens.
Thank you, Representative Cowan, for your remembrance of someone who died fighting for our country. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you to the representative from the coast. Thank you, Representative Cowan, for that remembrance. Colleagues, in the last several days, our colleagues from Southern Oregon have talked to you about what the potential loss of the ONC timber funds are going to mean to Southern Oregon. In my county, for instance, we are facing the largest library closure in the history of the United States. We're making headlines around the country for this. But I would like to put across the idea it's not just a Southern Oregon or a coastal problem losing these funds. Each one of our districts is impacted. Yesterday we had an impassioned debate about health insurance for our schools and trying to save money there. Every school district in our state is impacted by the loss of these funds. These funds from our counties go into the general school fund. They are spread throughout every school district in the state. This is not just a rural county problem. This is an Oregon problem, and we all have to face it. I just want to make sure that everyone understands this impacts all of us. Thank you.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Honorable colleagues, I'm proud of this body for passing House Bill 2630, which allows us to contribute to the Oregon Veterans Home Account. However, honorable colleagues, I'm very disappointed to learn that the Ways and Means process this leadership this week took out the $300,000 dedicated to the Oregon Veterans Home Account. Colleagues, there is no money appropriated for this home. I spoke to a friend of mine who is chairman of the Governor's Veterans Council yesterday. He visits this home on a regular basis. They have no water. They have no money to repair the hot water heater at the Oregon Veterans Home. I urge our leadership to put the money back in the budget for the Oregon Veterans Home. It's so important to us and our future to do this. Thank you.
Further remonstrances? Representative Jensen, Representative Barnhart, serving as Dean of the House, 10:30 a.m., Thursday, March 15, 2007.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House stand adjourned until Thursday, March 15th at 10:30 a.m.
Representative Barnhart moves the House adjourned until 10:30 a.m., Thursday, March 15, 2007. Without objection, House is adjourned.